Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome everyone, welcome, welcome. Well, I believe it was Groucho Marx who once said that he found television very educational. Every time somebody turns on the TV set, he would get up and go in the other room and read a book. And in I Can Read With My Eyes Shut, Dr. Seuss wrote, "The more that you read, the more things you will know. The more that you learn, the more places you'll go." And William Nicholson said, "We read to know that we are not alone." And I think that is true of fiction as it is true of nonfiction. Well, today we're talking with two very prolific best-selling fiction authors. And although both have successfully written in the historical genre, they're now focused on very different genres. And both have hit the New York Times bestseller and the USA Today bestsellers numerous times. Coming up later in the show, I'll talk with Spokane author Linda Lael Miller, who likes big story, big country, and big cowboys, the hunky kind. But first, I'm pleased to welcome back a writer who lives in a very different world, much closer to the FBI, and she writes psychological thrillers, and that is Andrea Kane. Andrea's psychological thriller, The Girl Who Disappeared Twice, became an instant New York Times bestseller. It introduced a new series featuring forensic instincts. And her book, new book, it's just come out, The Line Between Here and Gone, is the next in that series. Kane is also the author of 8 romantic thrillers, 14 historical romances, and she lives in New Jersey, where I think she's kind of boiling to death right now. Andrea Kane, welcome.
My pleasure. It's good to be here.
And it's very high. I understand you're very, very hot right now.
Yes, I'm happily in my office in the air conditioning.
You're hot on the charts and hot in New Jersey. So this book is a follow-up, as I said. It's the second in a series. Tell us a little bit about that. We had you on last year. We talked about The Girl Who Disappeared Twice, which became, as I said, an instant New York Times bestseller. But this is the second in that series. So tell us a little bit about this book.
Well, it's the second, as you said, in the Forensic Instinct series. They are a very unique investigative team. I think I call them a rogue team, if you want to look at it that way, because they sort of operate both inside and outside the boundaries of the law, being that they're not official law enforcement. They get the job done. And in this case, the job involves a very ill infant who needs something very badly in order to go on living, and that is his father. And his father, unfortunately, is supposedly quite murdered and quite dead. But his mother has reason to believe that perhaps is not so. And if he is indeed alive, he could be the lifeline for her newborn baby. And so she, obviously, it's not a police case. They have, you know, the police case was shut with the death and the murder that they feel was conducted. And she's not ready to believe that. So these months later, she contacts Forensic Instincts, and they're on the case to try to locate her daddy father.
Yeah, baby daddy, as they call them, right?
Yeah, baby daddy.
So I was just reaching for the book here because I wanted to read just a couple of the blurbs on the back here. It's been called a real page-turner, keep you up all night, romantic suspense. And somebody makes the point of saying that Kane is a skilled writer, such a skilled writer, so the romantic complications between her intelligent and driven main characters never get in the way of the suspense. And I want to ask you how you do that, because I kind of find romantic books a little slow for me, but you've managed to keep put romance in here without slowing down the suspense, as this author said. So how do you do that?
I think, first of all, the human mind is the most exciting for me, and that lends itself to both. So I definitely think the most important thing is keeping the reader at the edge of their seat. But I think that I've moved to a point where the romantic interests are more realistic. Therefore, they're interactive, they're emotional, but they're also real. I mean, one of the main romantic tie here is Casey, who's the head of Forensic Instinct, with Hutch, who is in the behavioral analysis unit of the FBI, and they live in separate cities. He's obviously down in Virginia, which is near the Washington, D.C. headquarters, and she's in New York running her team. So it's a, I think it's a much more common happening in today's world, and I think it's something that women can relate to on that kind of a basis because they each have lives. It's not strictly, you know, all about gazing into each other's eyes. It's about having to make a relationship work. And not only are they in different parts of the country, they sometimes operate on different parts of the law because Hutch is very much an FBI guy and he operates exactly as he should. And she is not bound by those particular limitations. So they have their share of heated arguments as well as everything else. I think that that's probably what I, because I love relationships in general, not just romantic ones, but, you know, the ones that get at the heart of people.
Right, right.
In this case, it was a baby and her mother, his mother, excuse me. And, you know, I could go on and on. But I think that it's always paramount to keep the psychological suspense at the edge of the seat or the reader loses interest, as you said.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the newborn baby in the book, Justin. He has a disorder called severe combined immunodeficiency.
It's immunodeficiency.
There we
I know
go.
It's difficult.
I don't know why I was having a problem with it. I said it earlier, but he needed a stem cell transplant. What is that disease?
It's a very common one, actually. Well, certainly not as common, unfortunately, as we would fear, but it is a common one, and it is. A lot of people have heard of that story of the boy in the bubble. You know, that's exactly
right.
What it is. It basically compromises his immune system to the point where even the slightest germ could cause something fatal. So he's in a reverse isolation unit, so to speak, so that only certain people can go in. And he is protected from the world. But he obviously needs to have the stem cell transplant because that would actually put healthy cells in his body and help them start to develop that immune system.
Okay, good. Now, the team that you have put together, Forensic Instincts, comprised of a behaviorist, a techno wizard, an intuitive, a former Navy SEAL, a retired FBI agent, and of course, the human scent evidence dog. How did you come up with these characters? I read that, well, really the common bond between them all is that they have a blatant disregard for authority. Right.
Yes, they definitely want to get the job done. That's what they're. It's not so much they choose it that way, but if it needs to be done that way, they'll do it because in this case, saving the baby's life is paramount, which means finding his father if he's alive because he is the best donor, the most likely one to be a match, so to speak. And unfortunately, Amanda, the mother, is not a match, so this would be a lifesaver for her. And yeah, that's very true. They do have a very blatant disregard for what gets in their way. And I don't know how each of them was born. It sort of was each one at a time. I remember when I came up with Ryan thinking to myself that every techno genius that I've ever seen is this kind of, you know, nerdy, you know, locked in his basement. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be really cool to have somebody who was really this hot, intelligent, sophisticated guy who also happened to be a brilliant strategist, and not just somebody who played with computers. So it was that kind of thing. Each one was born for different reasons, but I think that each of them is unique in their own way, and then the way they interact is unique as well.
Right, right. Well, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, Andrea, I'm going to ask you about what you call the bittersweet lull after writing.
Okay.
Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest in this segment is Andrea Kane, and her new book is called The Line Between Here and Gone. Please stay with us.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
So you like some blowhard barking at you about politics? Really? Well, this isn't the station for you. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And I'm talking to two fiction writers today, both highly successful fiction authors. Both have hit the New York Times and USA bestsellers list numerous times. And my guest in this segment is Andrea Kane. The book we're talking about right now is The Line Between Here and Gone. And this is the second in the Forensic Instincts series. Interesting group of characters that Andrea writes about here. And Andrea, I want to ask you about what you call the lull, the bittersweet lull after writing. Because I know you stick to one book a year, right?
Yes, I do.
And the reason for that is because you do a lot of intensive research. We talked last time about how you go out to the FBI campus and spend a lot of time there researching and stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what is that bittersweet lull? Tell us about that.
I think that right after you finish a book, in certain ways, is when you feel closest to it. It's kind of like when you have a baby. The gestation period is 9 months, and then
right.
There it is. And you have to both let it go and then at the same time be part of it as you talk about it to other people. And then at the same time, you're starting your next book and you're looking at this blank page and thinking, could somebody write this for me? Because I have absolutely no idea how to get started. And I'm one of those crazed creatures that feels very void when I'm not writing. I know a lot of people really need to regenerate. And I probably do, but I just am not a good regenerator. I'm a let's get started in the next one person. So especially now when I have a team, so I can see them already moving on to the next thing and I can kind of feel what's happening, I try very hard to take a few weeks and do not writing, but I'm not very good at it. So the lull is kind of a bittersweet, it feels so good, it's done, it's in, it's like rah-rah, have some ice cream. But at the same time, it's like, oh, I kind of miss it.
Right.
So I think this time around, and last time around, I felt very lucky because I didn't have to say goodbye to the main characters. They were coming back.
Right. Yeah, I'm sure that helps. You've got something to look forward to and ideas to start generating then. When the ideas don't come for you, what kind of things do you do to get inspired?
Usually for me, it's the research because it means talking to people. Like when I did The Line Between Here and Gone, I had to do a lot of medical research, obviously, since I'm not a doctor and certainly not a specialist in SCID. So I was contacting specialists, and I love learning. I kind of feel like each book is a learning experience because I learn new careers, new aspects of life. So I learned all about this disease, and I learned the help that could be offered, and it made me feel maybe I was offering something worthwhile on top of the enjoyment of the book, but maybe an education too, and it's certainly one for me. So I think that when I'm feeling my most uncreative and I'm feeling like nothing is really coming, I tend to turn to my consultants in the various fields and get a jolt start that way, and that will often help me get going.
Right. I love research too. People look at me like I'm weird when I say I love research.
I understand.
It's like they look at me like, get a life.
Yeah, people tell me how many months, but in order to get inside all these people and really understand what I'm writing, I need to do that research so I can feel what, in this case, Amanda was feeling, which was extremely painful because I'm a mother too. And that sort of connection is a hard one to make, to have to be inside this poor woman whose baby might be dying. But those kinds of things, you can't really, at least for me, I can't really create a character unless I can really feel and think what they're doing. So I have to be inside them, and that means research.
Yes, and that's what makes your books so good and so successful.
Oh, thank you.
I know you've written, I know it's over 20. I know there are a lot of books out there. My favorite quote, I think, from last time we talked, you said to me that loading a Glock 22 magazine is just like loading a Pez dispenser.
Except, yes, it absolutely is.
Except much harder. What in the research for this book challenged you, if anything?
Well, both the medical research was really challenging because when I talk to specialists, obviously they're so familiar with the big, it's like when people watch House and you hear words that you don't know what they mean and you need to reduce them to a language that you as a writer understand as well as your reader understands. So that was one big part. And the other part, which is very challenging, was working with undercover people in this particular field, because the FBI undercover, obviously most of what they do is classified, and I had to be very careful in where I would tread and where I wouldn't, but I needed to learn a great deal about that. So those two areas, I would say, were my most challenging in this book.
Mm. What do you think may surprise readers who read the first book? What do you think might surprise them in this book?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe more of the in-depth study of the characters themselves. And I don't think that any of my readers will be surprised by the fact that Justin lives, because they know me. I never kill children or animals. So that part won't surprise anybody. How he lives, that's another story. I hope that will be a surprise, and it will kind of make people go, whoa, when it happens. So that would be my hopeful main surprise.
Mm. Now, I think it's pretty easy for authors to measure a book's success because we have standards in place. The New York Times, the USA are two of the biggest and best lists around, and you've made those numerous times. How do you measure personal success, Andrea?
I'm a horrible self-critic. I'm so cruel to myself. I don't think any critic could be as hard on me. So what usually happens is I see all the flaws while I'm writing it, and then when it's finished and people will say this is wonderful, then I'll read it again and think, oh, this really is a lot better than I thought. It's a good book. And then immediately on the heels of that comes, oh, my God, I can never do it again. That's generally – so that's what drives me, the fact that complacency – I think, breeds a loss of everything in a book. And I try very hard to always remember that you're only as good as your last book, so to speak. So mm-hmm. you can't rest on your laurels.
Mm-hmm. I read somewhere that your brain never shuts down anyway. So vacations don't
it
work
doesn't.
For you.
And sleep doesn't come easily either, because that's usually when these great ideas arrive, 3 a.m. And if I don't get them down, I don't remember them at 7 a.m.
Right. So what do? Jump out of bed and start writing?
What I do is I actually keep either my iPad or my laptop near the bed so I can jot something down and save it, and then I can at least hopefully go back to sleep for a little while.
Oh, that's good. I have a little recorder I keep by my bed because I find if I actually get up and open my eyes to write, I can't get back to sleep. But
exactly. It's very stimulating, and you're up and at them.
Yeah, yeah. So we're almost at the end of our segment here. What would you like to tell listeners about the series, about your work in general?
I think that I would like to say that I hope that I impact people's lives. As you said, fiction can as well as nonfiction. I'd like to teach people something, but most of all, I'd like to bring them relationships that work, both business and personal, and make them feel like they're drawn into the book, drawn into the characters, and that they care. And then I get the kind of mail I get that says, either bring back so-and-so, bring back so-and-so, or more importantly, bring back the whole team. We want to see more. So that would be my goal. It's always my goal to make a difference in my readers' lives, and it never will change.
Yeah, and you're working on the next one already?
Yes, I've already started the next book in Forensic Instincts Lives, and I'm already being drawn in, and it's a whole different book because it actually threatens one of them personally.
Ah, okay. Well, that we'll have to wait for that then. I guess we'll talk to you next year when that one comes
exactly.
out. Well, I thank you for being with us. I know listeners can find out more about you at andreakane.com. Anything else
Absolutely.
You'd like to leave us with?
They could find me on Facebook. They could find me on Twitter. I really do try to stay in touch with my readers as much as I can.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being with us today, Andrea, and good luck with this. I'm sure you don't need it, but there you go.
Thank you so much. It was wonderful talking to you again, and thank you.
And to you. And my guest, Andrea Kane, her latest book, The Line Between Here and Gone, and this is the second book in a series of with the Forensic Instincts team. And stay with us when we come back. We're going to have a little trivia on books, and then a little later on we're going to be talking with Linda Lael-Miller, who Andrea knows very well. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, it is. We've got the 4th of July coming up this week, and I don't know about you, but I'm looking forward to some downtime. And I do a lot of reading for the show and a lot of reading for other projects that I work on. Mostly nonfiction, but you know, sometimes I get a chance to read fiction, and so I'm kind of looking forward to grabbing a book I haven't read yet and doing some reading over the course of this week. How about you, Eric? I'm going to bring Eric in here, my trusty sidekick, Eric Ryder, of course, who keeps us live on the air every week.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I tend to not necessarily read more during the summer, but you know, I try and read throughout the year. But I know a lot of people, you know, because the summer is when people get a chance to be out on the beach, and a lot of people like to read when they're on the beach. So I'm looking forward to hopefully reading something while I'm on the beach.
Other than the cereal box, yeah.
Yes.
It's a good excuse, especially for busy moms. You know, they can, if their kids are at the beach playing, they can sometimes dig their nose into a book, which they probably don't get much chance to do. So I thought we'd do something fun in this segment. And look at original titles of some famous books.
Okay.
And I want to see if you can guess what they were changed to, what we know them as now, okay?
All right, cool.
I'm going to give you the original title.
And are you going to tell me what you've got planned on the docket to read this summer?
What are you reading right now? What am I reading? I'm actually reading a book by David Baldacci. I just finished a great book called Psychopath.
Ooh, psychopath, that sounds interesting.
Oh, the psychopath test. I could talk for the rest of the show about the psychopath test. It is really interesting. It's nonfiction. It's by John Ronson, who I've
loved. John Ronson.
Yeah, the guy who did
Men Who Stare at Goats. Yeah,
the
great book
was
the
phenomenal.
Movie was
the
terrible.
Movie was,
the book was fantastic. Yes.
Yeah, the movie was awful.
And John's been on the show too.
He's been on the show, and he's in London. He's a British journalist, and he also wrote them, and I read that. But I just finished the psychopath test, and it is really interesting. I keep looking at everybody now. Are you a psychopath?
Right.
And thinking about all the people I know and putting them into a psychopath category. But he said he and his wife did the same as he was writing this book. It took him a year or so to write this book and do the research. And he said they did the same. Sat down and put their friends into categories. So,
excellent. But,
yeah.
Excellent.
So I just finished that. So I'm reading David Baldacci right now. One of my favorite authors. So, okay. This is one of my absolute all-time favorite books. And when it was submitted to the publisher, the first title it was given is First Impressions.
First Impressions.
You can ask me questions if you want. Or okay. You can just tell me you
first,
don't know.
it was entitled First Impression. So you can't tell me the author? Or can you tell me the author?
Well, I will. It was Jane Austen.
Jane Austen. Okay. I'm trying to remember all the Jane Austen books. I'm drawing a blank on this one.
Well,
I'm going to say Great Expectations,
which
is not by Jane Austen.
By Jane Austen, no. That's okay.
It was a two-word title. I took a stab at it.
No, it was Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice, okay.
Yeah, this one is a huge book, I'll
Pride and Prejudice is a better title than First Impressions.
Yeah, well, I think they all are. But maybe that's because we know them the way we know them. This was another one that made me, surprised me. It's called All's Well That Ends Well.
All's Well That Ends Well. What was this book about?
It's huge. It's like this thick, which for those who can't see me is about 5 inches thick.
Is it War and Peace?
It's War and Peace.
Tolstoy.
Yeah. This was another
famously known for being a big book.
Yeah. This was probably one you read as a little boy, or maybe as a big boy. I don't know. it was called The Sea Cook.
The Sea Cook.
Yeah, as in S-E-A, The Sea Cook.
Oh, boy. The Sea Cook.
And Brian, your intern, is whispering something there.
Brian, did you have a guess at this one?
I was just going to suggest The Man in the Sea.
No.
That's a good guess.
It is a good guess.
The Sea Cook. Boy, you know, I am drawing a blank
on this one as well. I'll tell you. Treasure Island.
Treasure Island. Okay, that makes a lot of sense now.
Okay, I'm going to blank one of the words out when I give you this title because it will give it away.
Okay.
Imagine going to the bookstore. Could you tell me, please, if you have, and here's the title, the original title, Incident at West Egg, semicolon, Among Ash Heaps and Millionaires, Trimalchio in West Egg, On the Roads to West Egg, Gold-Hatted Blank, and The High-Banding Lover.
Okay. You know, I am so glad that we're not playing this for money because I would be completely broke.
No, I'm almost wondering if those were like a bunch of titles that it was given. But anyway, you know, maybe Among Ash Heaps and Millionaires or On the Roads to West Egg or because it's just too long for a title.
Absolutely.
But anyway, I'll put you on.
That sounds like a Fiona Apple album or something. Very long title.
We know it as The Great Gatsby.
Okay. I almost said that, but.
Of course you did.
Yes.
All right. This is very well known. And this is one I nicked off my mother's bookshelf and took to school one day. And
did you get in trouble for it?
No.
Because this would indicate.
My mother gave me the carpetbaggers to read when I was 11 years old. So I don't know why I bothered nicking it. I could have just taken it. It was originally called Tenderness. Tenderness.
Tenderness.
And it's very famous. They've made lots of plays about it, a few films about it, mostly plays. Well, lots of British TV programs.
What's Tenderness about?
Well, I'll just give you the title. Shall I just give you the title?
Okay, or you can tell me what it was
about.
Well,
I can't really remember. It's about...
Okay, who's it by?
Glenda Jackson, Alan Bates, and Oliver Reed, I think, starred in one of the versions of it. But it was Lady Chatterley's Lover.
Okay. Mm. I'm vaguely familiar with that one.
Yeah. And we all know there's a whole new series out. Well, it's not so new now, but there's a whole series called Twilight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this book, which was written earlier, way back now, I forget exactly when this was written, but this book was called Twilight when it was submitted.
Okay. Was it about vampires?
No, I'll tell you. It was a Faulkner book. Faulkner?
I don't know.
And there's actually one that I can think of his right now, and that was the one we're talking about. It's called The Sound and the Fury.
Okay. Sound and the Fury, a much better title than Twilight.
Yes, definitely. And how about this one? This is called Catch 18.
Catch 18. Would that have been Catch 22?
Yes. Okay. I wanted to give you a throwaway there.
Wow.
But why Catch 18?
I have no idea.
I saw this was originally called that, and I didn't have time to look up why Catch 18.
Well, isn't Catch 22 an expression, or does the expression come from the book? Which came first, chicken or the egg?
Well, this is a good question. I did read something about this a while ago, but since then, that information has been placed with new information in my brain.
It's been
replaced
with the old titles of books.
All right, we're going to end since this is since summer's coming up. And I remember going to see this film with my mother and, oh gosh, about 8 or 9 of our friends when we were kids, and we lined up on Boxing Day in England to watch this film.
Which is the day after Christmas.
The day after Christmas, even though we're talking about summer here. But I remember lining up, and my mother kept saying, oh, this is going to be terrible. They can't possibly make a film about a blank that's going to be any good. This is going to be ridiculous. And she came out and she was like, that was brilliant. Of course, you have to remember this was many years ago, right? Mm-hmm. But the book, this is going to be an easy one. The book was called The Summer of the Shark, The Terror of the Monster, The Jaws of the Leviathan.
Jaws.
I should have given you a heads up on that, and we could have led to break with Jaws music.
We could have. How could they not make a movie out of that, I guess, is what I would have thought, because it seemed so cinematic.
Well, yeah, but she just couldn't see how a film was going to hold her attention about a jaw.
Or how they're going to make a realistic
about a shark.
Shark. Well, can I give a tip on a book?
You certainly can.
If anybody's interested, I read a lot of nonfiction. I love music. I'm reading a book right now called Sonic Boom. It came out a couple years ago, but it's about the history of Northwest rock from Louie Louie to Smells Like Teen Spirit. So if you're interested in history, if you're interested in rock and roll, if you're interested in the Northwest, it's a really fun book to read. It's by Peter Blutcha. And also, there's a book out called Louie Louie, which is all about that song, Louie Louie, and many, many, many incarnations, including the role the Northwest played in that. So if you like local history, if you like rock and roll, also a great book to check out.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Eric. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have Linda Lale Miller with us. And after reading and listening to Linda talk about cowboys, I think I'm going to go get me a cowboy. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We'll be right back. I'm writing about the book I read. I have to sing about the book I read. I'm embarrassed to admit it, hit the soft spot of my heart when I found out you wrote the book I read. So take my shoulders and
do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Do you really know your rights when you go to the hospital? And do you know if you have access to your doctor's notes or how to view your medical records? Join us next week to find out. Before you need to know, tune in at noon Pacific time for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair on Alternative Talk 1150 or online at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Talk radio with a difference. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, we're talking about fiction today. We had Andrea Kane with us earlier today. And now I'm joined by Linda Lale Miller. She's been described as the first lady of the West. She's a number one New York Times and USA Today bestselling author of more than 100 historical and contemporary novels, most of which reflect her love of the West. She was raised in Northport, Washington. And Northport, Washington. And I've read that she is a self confessed barn goddess, and she now lives in Spokane, Washington. Let me bring Linda on, and we can talk some more. Linda Lael Miller, welcome to the show today.
Thanks, Vicki. I'm glad to be here.
Well, Andrea Kane joined us first, and she said to say hi because you guys know one another very well.
We do indeed.
And I want to just let listeners know that your new book is called Big Sky Country.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part of a series, I understand. There's another one coming out next month. Is that correct?
Right. It's the first of a trilogy.
Okay.
Actually, it's a double trilogy, but that's too complicated, so we'll just get to that later.
Okay.
There are actually six books in this series instead of three, as usual.
Okay. Well, and this is the first one, though, Big Country.
Absolutely.
Big Sky
this
Country.
Is the first one, the introductory
right.
book.
So I was, I'm not much of a cowboy kind of girl, but after reading a lot about cowboys doing my research, I thought maybe I need to go get one.
They kind of grow on you, you know, they kind of grow on you. And the way they look walking around in those Wrangler jeans doesn't hurt either.
Well, I was watching, I went to your website and was watching the videos of the photo shoot for the guys that you put on the front of the book.
Yeah. Aren't they cute?
They're very cute.
Yeah,
very
I
cute.
Thought so too. I didn't choose them, but I heartily approve.
So let's just look a little bit at your background, and then we'll talk about the book that's come out already. It just came out, and the one that's coming out in August. Because you grew up in Washington, I understand. Your father was a town marshal.
Yes.
So you grew up very much around this kind of country. Talk to us a little bit about what it was like growing up.
It was basically living in the Old West, for the reason that practically everybody I knew was a rancher or a farmer, had an interest in that. And, you know, it was a way of life. Also, my dad and my uncle were both rodeo cowboys in their younger days. So there was a lot of great stories that got swapped around the table and stuff. And I just would collect those and hold on to them. And, you know, some alchemy would happen and I'd make something else out of them. Also, I had an adopted grandmother who had lived outside of Coffeyville, Kansas, when the Dalton brothers tried to rob the bank, and she heard the gunshots. So that kind of, you know, that kind of story. Also, another time, Jesse James slept in her dad's barn. So, you know, I kind of had, you know, had it already going and just had to run with it. And then, of course, I was absolutely crazy about shows like Bonanza and Big Valley. So that very much affected how and what I write.
Right. Now, I read that you base your ultimate cowboy, if you want, on your father.
Yeah.
So tell us what your father was like.
Well, you know, he was a human being with failings like every other human being, but he lived by the Western code. He always tried to do the right thing. And he taught us that, you know, in the face of any kind of even when it might be expedient to do something else, it is always better to do the right thing. And this is fundamentally what a cowboy is to me, you know, at least a fictional cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
Real cowboys, of course, are human beings with failings. But, you know, that isn't what we're looking for when we read entertainment fiction, or at least it's not what I'm looking for.
Right, right.
I want ideals and, you know, and yet have it be realistic enough that I, you know, don't have to throw it across the room either.
Right. I was reading an article where you were talking about your work and cowboys in general, and you said, as for their erotic appeal, there's something very sexy about knowing that at 4 a.m. in the morning, if it's 20 degrees below zero, there's a guy going to get up and take care of things. Is that what you think draws people
Absolutely.
To them?
They will deal with a crisis. They will protect their women, their children, and their livestock and pets at great sacrifice to their, you know, they're ultimately thoroughly responsible. They do always what needs to be done.
Right.
And I think that's comforting to everybody. I mean, I'm not saying that women have to be dependent on a man or any of that stuff, because that's certainly not the way I think or live. But it is nice, if you have a partner, to have somebody who's an asset, not a liability, you know?
Absolutely. I think most people would agree with that.
Yeah, I think
whatever,
so, too.
whatever side of the, you know, male or female.
Right.
So you've lived also in Italy and London. I mean, you've had a very well-rounded life, you know, when I was doing the research on you. What have you done other than writing? Have you always written? I'm guessing, I mean, you've written over 100 books here. That's taken a lot of your life, I would think.
Yes, I've always written since I was about 10. And a teacher praised me for it. And I was like, well, there's something I'm talented at. So I just sort of jumped all over that. All my life, I wanted to travel, especially to England, because I was absolutely besotted with the Beatles. And from then on, I had to go to London. Well, when I actually went there many years later, I've lost count of how many times I visited, but I just loved it so much. And it just seemed like a really natural place for me to be. So I love traveling because, I don't know, maybe it's my ADD, but I like stimulation and I like things to be different, you know, a little variety.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I'm very much a homebody.
Right, right. Well, Ray Bradbury said that, you know, good writers have to feast on life, and you certainly sound as though you feasted on life.
You do things, see things, see all kinds of people, not just nice ones.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Although I must say the British are the most polite people.
I've been accused of being overly polite. I'm not quite sure how you can be overly polite. But,
I don't know. That seems like a contradiction in terms to me. But
it was Eric Weiner, actually, who's an NPR correspondent, and he wrote The Happiest Place on World, or so, One Grump's Journey Around the World, or something like that. So he's an admitted grump. So we'll discount that.
I am not. I love life. I feel so blessed and so grateful. And interested in, you know, I'm interested in people. That's the main thing. And, you know.
And that's so what helps you build great stories.
I've been all over the world, but London is my favorite by a long shot.
Oh, why do you like it so much?
It has everything. You know, all the food. And I can't go to Stonehenge enough. I go, you know, I can just do that over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Or to Windsor Castle or the Tower. You know, on the last trip, they had put in the eye of, is it, that's what it's called? The
right,
eye,
the big
Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's
awesome
down there. I was down there myself last year. It was awesome down there.
The view from there is absolutely striking. On the other hand, I kind of like, I'm a traditionalist, and I'm like, you put this across from Westminster Abbey and the Houses of Parliament, you know, in a way it's a dichotomy.
It is.
Not my decision.
It is. I think then you're just kind of pleasing both people, because one side of the river you've got the modern and the other side of the river you've got traditional.
Yeah, well, it seems to work, you know. And I personally, if it had been my decision, I wouldn't have let him put it there. But that's they didn't consult me. I don't know. I did not hear from the Queen or even the Prime Minister.
Well, how rude.
I know.
All right, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll find out what Linda Lael Miller's new book is all about. Please stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick and Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on
Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Find out about upcoming shows at conversationslive.net.
Don't touch that dial. You might miss something life-changing. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
I want to be a cowboy.
And welcome back, everyone. You might guess we're talking cowboys.
I like that intro. That's perfect.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is best-selling author Linda Lael Miller. Linda, I understand that at one point you had a series. Did you had all three books on number one on that series? Is that?
I actually have been number one 5 times. At last count, so
on the New York Times bestseller list. That's not easy to do.
No, it sure isn't. I never thought it was going to happen to me. Other people, yes, not me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the book, because we haven't really gone into the story behind it. And I know Sheriff Slade Barlow, my sister, will be pleased that you picked a Barlow there, because that's her married name.
Oh, yeah. Sheriff Slade, it's a real good cowboy name. Yeah, I think.
So tell us a little bit about Sheriff Slade Barlow and the story around him and what's going on there.
Well, Slade is the illegitimate son of a local ranch, wealthy local rancher. And, of course, he has a half-brother who's legitimate, and they haven't really gotten along all that well. So we have they're forced through circumstances to deal with each other, and that's always interesting to me. And of course, the other thing is he was divorced and he was hurt, and you know the last thing he wants to do is fall in love. He's kind of a strong, silent type, like many cowboys. He doesn't say a lot. And then this woman comes back to town that he knew when he was young, and he did not like her, and she didn't like him. So immediately, it's what are you doing here? You know, but the attraction between them can't be. You know, as much as they try, they can't get over this attraction.
Yeah. And that all makes for good story, that tension.
Right, conflict, you know, yes. if everybody, because these guys in romance novels, and not just mine, but anybody's, they're always so appealing. If you don't have a good conflict, people are going to say, well, why not just marry the guy? You know,
yeah.
Why
yeah.
do I have to read through 300 pages to get, you know? So you need to have that, some reason why there's at least a barrier. Although, of course, the readers, they know it's going to work out, but that's the trick of it, because you also have to try to convince them that this might be the one time when it doesn't.
Right, right.
So now it's not easy.
Yes, no, it's not easy to build that tension and keep a believable story going. You know, and I'm sure you've heard this many times, because romance fiction often is poo-pooed by a lot of writers, and yet it's the biggest selling genre.
Yeah, my standard answer to that is that I cry all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
I'm so sad. But the thing is that I've never understood is why a book where you have extensive descriptions of the Holocaust or something, and that is literature. But if you have anything that's happy or positive, it's frou-frou, you know.
Yeah.
But the truth is in the numbers, and people just love them.
Yeah.
And I think because they're escape.
Well, we need that kind of escape.
Well,
when
of course
I read
we
a book,
do.
If it's not nonfiction, I definitely want to escape. I actually dropped from one book club because they kept reading the most miserable books. And I thought, I want to escape.
It's kind of like when the Oprah books came out. I mean, they were beautifully written, and I read a couple of them, but my daughter put it well. She said they should come with a razor blade. And, you know, I kind of felt that way. It's like they had to be depressing to be considered, you know, worthwhile, and I think that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need that in our fiction. We can get that on the news.
Yeah. Well, romance fiction, I read, is a $1.36 billion industry. It's probably more than that now.
It's huge.
It's the largest share of the consumer book market. More than a quarter of all books sold mm-hmm. are romances. And you've made over 100 books. You've made quite a contribution to that.
What?
You used to write historical. Why the switch, Linda? Why?
I still enjoy writing historicals, and I write Christmas books, one a year that is historical, but... It's, publishing is a business like everything else, and the fact is that the historicals simply don't sell as many as the modern contemporary ones. And I'm not sure why that is, but I suspect it's because there's not so much emphasis on history in people's modern educations, you know, and so it seems absolutely too foreign to
right.
them.
Right. Now, unlike Andrea, my first guest, we didn't talk about this today, but I remember from last time I talked with her, she likes to outline pretty solidly. You like to outline very loosely when you're developing your novel. You say you like to mostly make it up as you go along. Talk to us about that process, if you would.
Well, I have to come up with at least a skeletal outline just so that they can make sure they're not already publishing something like too much like that, or, you know, basically that for some crazy market reason it wouldn't work. But I basically do just make it up as I go along. But I do make a skeleton so that I can make the editor and the people at the publishing house happy. But they know that it will change. It always changes because, for me, the process is extremely organic. As I get to know the characters, they start to, you know, go in directions I hadn't anticipated. And if it's a good direction, of course, I don't want to get in the way of that.
Right, right. So I read that you kind of, you loosely outline then, you like this more organic approach, and you actually role play this in your head like a movie.
When I'm writing the scene, actually, I sort of like zone out. It's not as strange as it sounds.
But I
see the whole thing happening in my head, and I write it down. And that is another reason why sometimes it surprises me. So, and it's going to develop out of things that, you know, I know a lot of people who outline like Andrea does and do it successfully, but it just doesn't work for me.
Right.
I can do it, but the book won't be anything like that. So.
Right. Well, it's interesting just to hear how people work differently. Andrea Kane, we spoke to earlier, again, said that she can never switch off, basically. She's always thinking about writing. And I've heard you, Linda, say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's true of everybody. You overhear a conversation at the cafe or in the supermarket and or anywhere, and you start going, what if? And it constantly bubbles under the surface. So I'd say I totally agree with Andrea. It doesn't shut off. It's just part of who we are.
Yeah, yeah. I know I've told this story before, but years ago I was in L.A. When I lived down south, and I went to a screenwriters conference, and this guy who he wrote the original MASH and Kojak and all those kind of shows, he wrote on the blackboard, you know, being a writer is like having homework for the rest of your life. You can never, ever switch off. If you're not writing, you're eavesdropping. If you're not eavesdropping, you're researching, et cetera.
I think that's absolutely true. My daughter is a screenwriter, and she would probably agree with that. We're constantly thinking about how can we steal that, you know?
Yeah. When Andrea called the end of the book and the beginning of the next one the bittersweet lull between writing books, you've written over 100, as I've said several times. I'm guessing you don't get much of a lull between books.
No, not much. That's okay. Writing is my life, and I have animals which I cherish, and I have a art hobby. So I have a studio. That's where I am right now because it's going to be quieter down here. And so I travel when I can, and I try to keep it interesting so that I don't start covering the same ground or something. But I basically love it so much that I would do it anyway. I don't want Harlequin to find out.
We won't tell them.
I wrote for like 40 years, or 20 really, without making a nickel. So if you average it out, it's really not that impressive.
But you're doing great now, so that's all that counts, right?
Yeah, that's
all that counts.
Very blessed. It's doing well, and in spite of the recession, which is not true of every vocation, so I've felt fortunate with that too.
Right. Well, we're right at the end of our session. Good talking to you, Linda. Appreciate you being with us. And I know your website, it will give us your website because I actually didn't write
Linda
it.
It's Linda Lael, LAEL Miller.com.
Okay.
And my scholarship information and videos and everything are on there.
Yeah, take a look at Linda's website. There's some interesting videos on there if you want to look at some cowboys.
They're definitely inspiring.
And I know she's got a big scholarship fund, which she's very passionate about. Unfortunately, we don't have time to go over that now, but you can find out more at lindalaelmiller.com. And Lael is spelled L-A-E-L. And Linda's book is Big Sky Country and coming out next month, 1st of August, actually, is Big Sky Montana, which will be the second in this series.
Big Sky Mountain.
Oh, excuse me. Big Sky
That's
Mountain.
Close enough, but
Big Sky Mountain.
Mountain.
No, let's get it right. All right, then. Well, we have to run, so I thank you for tuning in and being with us today. I appreciate you spending this hour with us, and we'll be back next week. Until then, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617. If you have any feedback or comments on today's show, let me know. You can also reach me at info@conversationslive.net. Again, thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.